My framework is unique and valuable. So for all of our marketing, we want it to be something that is unique. No one else should be able to do it. Doesn't mean it has to be wildly out there. It just means another brand shouldn't be able to exactly replicate that campaign. And then valuable, is it showing us off, which we're trying not to do, or is it actually helping our user and audience?
Everyone, this is the Commerce Experience Podcast. As a show, we aim to equip e-commerce professionals with the tools and insights necessary to thrive in the ever-evolving space that is commerce. I'm your host, Elena Kachan, Community Marketing Manager at Bloomreach. Today, I'm joined by Natalie Marco Tullio, Head of Growth and Operations at Nevatic, a leader of providing interactive platform demos early in the buying journey. Now, you might be wondering exactly why this type of subject matter expert may be a guest on an e-commerce podcast, but what stuck out to me about Natalie's expertise is her knowledge of working with small teams and her knack for navigating those obvious obstacles that come along with it. And at Bloomreach, we often see marketing or e-commerce teams that consist of two or three people, and we know that they couldn't experience the success they are capable of without technology, whether that's AI technology that drives e-commerce experiences or technology like Nevatic that makes it possible for go-to-market teams to improve conversions. But before we get into those topics, Natalie, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Almost every marketer has been tasked with doing more with less in the current macroeconomic environment. And with a small team and high demands, obviously being in tech and a woman in business, I'm curious about how you manage expectations with your team.
I feel like every marketer I'm talking to right now is a little stressed and a little pressed for time, but happy to talk about how I deal with it internally, especially being a team of one for most of my career now. I think one of the biggest things, and this is going to sound really obvious, but just like aligning on priorities, whether it's for the quarter, for the month, and beyond just knowing, okay, am I on the right track with what leadership wants? That's kind of obvious. But I use it as a tool. Like I have kind of like a multi-layer defense system to say no. And I use this as, let's say, line number one for saying no. So if someone brings this big, a new initiative, but we've agreed at the beginning of the quarter, our initiative is, let's say, you know, Y, and they are coming in and saying, let's do initiative X. Well, then I can say, okay, but is that a bigger priority than initiative Y? Because we agreed on that earlier on and we can't take on both in this time frame. So it sounds pretty obvious, but I'd say like line number one is just make sure you do all agree, because then it's not, you don't think it's a good idea when someone brings up a new idea. It's, hey, you said that this is the biggest priority and I don't want to go against what you said was the biggest priority.
That's like psychology. It's like, remember that time that you told me that XYZ was the priority and now we're on Y? Just checking to make sure that everything is along with what you said. That's too funny. I see myself doing this a lot too. It's like, okay, well, I've got X, Y, and Z to focus on, but you mentioned, and here you want me to do this. So I think that happens a lot, especially in technology when things move so quickly. And I know working with small teams is really difficult. I've done that myself. But I think that there's an expectation from leadership to have everyone on the team and maybe in the context of marketing to become generalists, to be able to like handle anything that comes their way, no matter what the priority is. And I think that we're all expected to like pivot quickly and embrace what's new and hot. So how do you determine what you prioritize? And I know you kind of talked about like saying no if it goes in a different direction, but anything you want to add to that when maybe you have a new initiative that you want to tackle, but you're still not finished with the one that you were working on previously. Have you experienced that before?
Definitely have experienced that before, or like more leadership comes in and they're like, oh, but we have this great new idea. I think step number one is, again, does it agree with our priorities? And then kind of giving a timeline for when you could tackle it. I find that really helps. Like, don't just say no, but say like, okay, right now we've agreed our priority is this. Do you think this new initiative is higher priority? If so, I can readjust my prioritization, but not being clear, like I'll do it at the same time. And then another really helpful tip, I know we were talking about this a little bit in our prep, was I have just a generic framework, which again helps it never be my opinion. It's the framework's opinion. That's the key. I think the thing you'll hear throughout is it's not your opinion, but my framework is unique and valuable. So for all of our marketing, we want it to be something that is unique. No one else should be able to do it. Doesn't mean it has to be wildly out there. It just means another brand shouldn't be able to exactly replicate that campaign. And then valuable, is it showing us off, which we're trying not to do, or is it actually helping our user and audience? So that's kind of my other framework of like, how do I prioritize things? Well, how much does it fall on the unique and valuable scale? And that can also help me when, again, leaders coming to me and they're like, hey, should we do this over this? Well, it's like, well, what we're currently working on might be more valuable to our audience than what you suggested.
So I love that you said this because I took this and it sounds pretty basic and pretty novel, but it just kind of blew my mind when we were talking about it for the first time. And I was like, I need to start using this. This is so gold because at the end of the day, everybody thinks that their idea is the best idea or their opinion is the best opinion. And you have to think about why should people care? Is it something that they can use in their day to day? Is it something that no one else can do? Or is it something that's going to help them actually do their job better? So that's something that we're trying to do on the Bloomreach side. And as I manage, you know, our community and our social media engagement, that's so important to us because a lot of people just want to post and share everything. And a lot of it is hyping yourself up when at the end of the day, like, no one cares about that thing that you want to share. And I know you're working really hard on it, but like, how do we frame it in a way that makes sense for the audience?
And I think it just protects you a little bit from, I think it, people constantly is marketing. Like they think the point of marketing to show off how awesome you are. So they're like, hey, we just won this new award. We're doing this thing. Like let's post about every single award we win. But then if you go, if someone, you know, a prospect goes to your LinkedIn, all they're going to see is like all these awards and they're not going to get an idea of how your product actually helps them. It's always going to be about you. So I think it also protects a little bit of that. It's ultimately at the end of the day, everything should be really relatable to your audience versus that feeling. I think we've all had that where we've seen marketing in B2C and B2B, which is like, oh, this feels a lot about you versus like how you're going to help me.
It's so true. And I think that's some training that we have to do as marketing experts. You know, leadership hires us to know what to do and they hire us to guide them on what we should be doing. So I love that you said that. I'm actually taking that into my practice. It's something that when someone comes to me with something, hey, we should post this in the community. I'm like, why should they care? So it's something that I'm tackling on a day-to-day basis, thanks to you. And I will forever give you credit on that. So it's clear that you've got a really healthy process for how you approach all of your tasks that you're given. And we know it's kind of important to maintain a healthy balance of, you know, when you're a one-woman show or maybe managing one more person, you need a work-life balance. And that can be challenging, especially in the tech industry or any industry, retail, e-commerce, high-demand environments. And I'm curious about what strategies you implement to help your team manage their workload, maybe even you, to prevent from burning out. Do you have that issue?
Definitely, especially as I mentioned with events right now, I'm feeling that. Like that also is an activity that's very draining for me. It's not my natural skill set. So I find that like, Definitely feeling a little longer days. But my tactics to help with those longer days, I think one, working when works best for you. I mean, we have a luxury of a more remote workplace. But like you mentioned I'm now a team of two. I just got a hire. And I tend to work better in the mornings. And I know I can't work super late. Like I am not like when I was younger, could work past 10. Usually like anything like that, like late nights, I can't do it anymore. But my new hire likes to work late. So rather than saying like, okay, we have to be on during these times or like you have to be doing these tasks and these, I often say like, I don't really care when you do it. And again, like let's find a time that makes realistic for it to be due, but I don't need to know exactly when you're doing it. And it doesn't need to be exactly when I'm on. Like, I don't care if you're not on in the morning when I wake up, because I know you're probably working later than me. And I found that has helped me so much because there's so many days where like, I didn't finish a project I wanted to, or maybe there's like a task that I just can't figure out. And then if I know my mental like timeline is around 9, 10 o'clock, not that I'm working that most days, but just I know if I hit that timeline, I'm like, hey, I'm just going to do it in the morning. It's not reminding myself like it's not the end of the world. And I often solve it in like 5 minutes sometimes that would have taken me an hour just because I'm not working naturally when I have the most energy. So I think trying to match your energy levels to your work, that has really helped me, especially like calendar blocking it in advance and knowing, okay, in the mornings I'll have deep work and then in the afternoons I should take more meetings.
I've embraced time blocking as well. And we have kind of a strategy around focus time and just making sure that you're focusing maybe at the time where you have the most energy. And I'm definitely not a morning person. So anytime I have an early meeting with someone in Europe, I'm like, I just want to let you know, I haven't had my coffee yet. So I want to talk about everybody's favorite thing, which is leadership buy-in. And I feel like it's always an uphill battle. In short, they see things a lot differently than the individual contributors who are in the weeds every day. Maybe people who are listening to this episode, but you've got an interesting approach. Can you take us through that Nevada case study where you can talk about cutting the buyer journey time in half and how you were able to make that happen with fewer resources?
Basically, over the past, I think it was like last year, we looked at what is a way each quarter that we can improve cutting the buying cycle in half. And really, that was through improving the buying experience. And the number one thing we did, and honestly, the thing that's going to be the most divisive and people are going to understand, is adding public-facing pricing. That was something that since I joined Nevada, I really wanted to do. I knew for our industry, I feel like in e-commerce, it's kind of obvious, right? Like, of course you should put pricing of what you're selling on your website. But in SaaS, that's like it's a very debated topic because if you publicly put your pricing, then you might not have as much leeway in the sales cycle. You can't experiment as much. And so this was something I knew would help cut down, to your point, cut down our buying cycle, help improve the buying experience. I knew our prospects wanted it. I had prospects reaching out to me on LinkedIn being like, what's your pricing? Why isn't your pricing publicly available? So I had plenty of signals saying that this was the right call. But I think step number one to getting buy-in is knowing the right time when to pitch something and really fight for something. So although from day one, I really wanted public-facing pricing, I knew we're also a really early startup. We hadn't really figured out our pricing model yet. Sales needed that time to experiment, to figure out what actually is the most favorable pricing model for our buyers. So even though I came in hot and was like, hey, we should do this, I kind of got that reaction of like a lot from a lot of leadership, like, absolutely not. This is not the time. And I was saying this to someone the other day. I think a good gut check is, let's say you have like 5 members of leadership. If you soft pitch an idea to them and 3 of them are like, absolutely not, maybe now's not the time. And don't think of it as a no for getting buy-in, but think of it as a not now. And then kind of keep monitoring maybe when will be the time. So that's, I feel like, the first, again, like line of defense is try to figure out when does it make sense to pitch something.
It's almost like that when you ask your parent for something and they say no, and then you go to the other parent, you know, sometimes it's not the right time. And leadership, they operate and they try to operate as a unit, but knowing when they're in the best mood, knowing when they might be receiving you well is so, so important. And it's like those soft skills that you kind of have to understand, especially being a woman in the tech space and managing this team and being the go-to resource. It's like, okay, I'm plotting a little bit. Let me make sure it's the right time so that way you don't squander your opportunity to get the green light on something.
Sort of going back to before saying about like opinions, right? Because let's say you find run now is not the right time, but then you do it again 3 months and you find like one of the 5 leadership members is actually really on board. Maybe they're noticing the early signals you are too. It's not that immediate no. And that's sort of what happened with me. Sales got on board and they were the most important stakeholders. Then it's, again, not just your opinion, because even though we're hired as marketers, I think for some reason, the last thing you ever want to do is just present your opinion. You also need to have data or third party. But when it's you and sales opinion, suddenly it can make it work. So I do think doing almost like those soft checks when you want to make something happen and then getting someone on your side makes a big difference.
I wanted to get into what I love about small teams and the ability to be agile and adapt. So I'm curious about how you foster a culture of innovation and creativity within your team to kind of overcome those challenges and stay really competitive in the market. Do you have any references there that you can share?
I always talk about this balance of like input and output time. So making sure that you're not, yes, during your good working times, like you should be doing maybe execution work. But if you know like the afternoon, your brain's not going to be fully on, maybe that's a good time to do input time, which is what I think of as like learning, basically. Maybe that's a good time to go for a walk and listen to a podcast. Maybe it's a good time to attend a webinar. Maybe it's a good time to listen to some customer calls. I think we have this bad habit because we have to do so much of thinking that we're only working when we're executing and putting pen to paper. But how do you get your ideas if you don't talk to customers? How do you get your ideas if you don't listen to expert podcasts? Like, we almost think of this work as stuff we should be doing on top of our jobs. And I think that's what can lean to burnout. But we should think and give ourselves grace in the day of like, okay, I'm going to schedule in some input learning times. And that's going to make the output time so much easier. Because suddenly then when you're thinking of messaging, let's say for a new website, you're not just starting from ground zero. You're like, oh, I talked with a customer last week. They said this interesting thing. Maybe that's some good inspiration for the website messaging. It makes everything more efficient if you give yourself that time.
One of our biggest messaging pillars here at Bloomreach is how do we empower our customers to feel limitless? And I think that this goes hand in hand where it's like, making sure that you block off time to be inspired, to be creative and have that freedom and give yourself some grace too. Like you don't have to, you're not a machine. You don't have to work 24/7 to be productive. So managing your schedule in a way that works best for you can ultimately lead to limitless results later, no matter what space you're in and whether technology helps you out or not. I always love that. And I love a hot girl walk with my podcast. And, you know, I always like take notes too when I'm listening and I'm like, this is actually learning. Like I feel better about taking this time or taking a lunch break when it makes sense. So on board with that. So as someone who has a clear rubric for approaching how to triage tasks on your to-do list, you obviously have a lot to do. Can you share with our audience what you think many people get wrong about prioritizing goals or maybe a specific example of how you've implemented the unique and valuable framework here that you mentioned?
I think one thing I see people get wrong and I'm really guilty of, if it's really tempting, if you write down your to-do list, especially like physically write it out with check boxes, to do the simplest things first, right? Like tackle the things that are quick dopamine hits, that are quick wins, and then you don't get to the big long-term projects that when you really evaluate something on the unique and valuable scale, it's not usually the, you know, the one-off LinkedIn post or the one-off ad campaign you set up that ends up being incredibly unique and valuable to your audience. It's something like something I'm going through this struggle right now is we're working on revamping our customer appreciation program, which is not like an easy task. It's not an obvious answer. It's not a quick win. And it's a lot of like psychology. It's a lot of how do I get my customers to feel appreciated and motivated? And that's the type of work that takes, I know will be incredibly valuable for our audience, is unique because most B2B SaaS companies don't do a very good job celebrating their customers, but it's not something that I can easily check off or like get a lot of quick wins from it. That's the other thing. Like we're not going to see the impact of this for probably 6 months. So I think if I just had a to-do list and worked just based off of that, that would constantly be getting pushed because it's not as easy to do and to check off. But when I do evaluate all my to-dos or what I should be doing against the unique and valuable framework, suddenly the small one-off things often are the things that get pushed or get evaluated. Like, is this really going to make a big impact or is this just going to make me feel good to do? So that definitely helps kind of force myself into some of those bigger projects versus just constantly wanting to get like quick wins done.
So Natalie, with all of these to-dos that you have and being a small team, when is the right time, in your opinion, to outsource? How do you determine when you're ready to hire someone else? And does that impact, you know, how you do your day-to-day?
Yeah, I think keeping track of the to-dos is helpful because you can realize what are the things that are taking me an outsourced amount of time, like really looking back on your day-to-day and your calendar, especially if you are calendar blocking. And I did this a few months ago. My CEO asked, you know, like, what percentage of your time is spent where? I took at my calendar, where I was calendar blocking, and I realized like a lot of my time was spent in design work. So if we needed new ads for an ad campaign, if we needed, you know, design covers for a video series we were running or for a blog post, like I was the one doing that design work. But when I looked at the output, it was okay. Like I found that I was doing, you know, spending like 2 to 3 hours making one design that wasn't very good because I'm not very good at design. And that's usually what happens is the things that we're not as good at. And look, sometimes you need to learn a new skill and just jump into it. But the things we're not as good at usually are the things that take us the most amount of time. So when I really looked back and saw how much time I was spending creating like low quality design work, that's when it became really clear. And to my CEO too, where I could make the argument of, hey, I'm spending like, you know, let's say 5 to 10 hours a month on design. It's not making a huge impact. Like I'm not uniquely skilled. Kind of, again, going back to unique and valuable, like I don't have a unique skill that makes me the person who needs to be doing this. So it makes sense for us to outsource this. And again, kind of go talking about prioritization, you can then say, if I'm spending, you know, 5 to 10 hours working on design, that's 5 to 10 hours I'm not working on this customer appreciation program, which I am uniquely, you know, I'm uniquely the one who can do that because I'm the one who knows the customers the best, who talked to them the most in that sense, or like knows the space the most. Like that's just kind of an example, but I think it really helps when you frame it as like, this is my skills. This is where I'm really strong. This is where I don't have this skill set. And outsourcing can also save me like 5 to 10 hours a month.
Yeah. And that's a huge case for it. They hired you to do the strategy, to lead the team. And sometimes there are tasks where you're just like, I am spinning my wheels here. This is not the best use of my time and expertise. So I love when leadership can recognize that. I know that that's not always the case. And you're kind of fighting for your life here. If anybody's worked on a small team, you probably have PTSD just hearing about this. But ultimately, that is something that we all are struggling with. And it's like, okay, I'm even hiring for an intern right now. So it's like, how can I help myself be more productive long-term? So I love that. Natalie, I absolutely loved this conversation. You dropped so many gems and I'm going to take with me to use in my day-to-day. And I hope she was really impactful for you guys too. So I do want to mention, she does have a podcast, Revenue on the Rocks. She talks about how to work with other teams, getting buy-in, some of the same things that we touched on today. So be sure to check that out. But Natalie, thank you so much for being on the show. We really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me and for giving a little podcast shout out there.
Absolutely. We got to show some love. Thank you all for listening. We really appreciate it. Again, we want to hear what you think. So send us your comments and questions you'd like to hear on the show. Email us at podcast@bloomreach.com. Connect with me on LinkedIn. Give us a follow at Bloomreach. But until next time, we will talk to you soon. Bye.